Buenos dias, and all the folks, welcome. We're delighted to see you. And Pastor, thank you for promoting the sword. In fact, I'll go ahead and tell you, I did not put envelopes out there yet, but I will. I've got them in the car. And I'm going to do something crazy, which they tell me I can do. One of the first things they told me when I got to the sword that I could do whatever I wanted to do. And I said, wow. Yes. Well, I found out there were limitations to that. I really did. But I do have the latitude to do a few things. And so while I'm here today and tomorrow, I hope that you'll take one of the envelopes, put your name and address on it, and you put in it whatever you feel like you can, whatever it is. And I will send you the sword for a year. You just do what you can do. Whatever that is, I'll be glad. I want to get it in your hands. I think once you get it, the next time you'll want to go ahead and sign up for it. But anyway, that'll be the deal, and I'll mention that again later. I also should tell you that if you notice while I'm up here, if you catch me making eyes at one of the ladies down here and maybe winking at her and even blowing kisses to her, you understand I do have my wife here. And she doesn't travel with me very much. She's had some health issues that has kind of limited her travel for a while. And when she feels like traveling, I'm just a different guy. I mean, coming down the freeway yesterday, we were laughing and cutting up, which we do all the time. And I told her, I said, you see this smile on my face? There's a reason why it's there. But anyway, if you have not met Betty yet, please come by and meet her sometime here this morning. And I'm teasing around a little bit, but I am delighted anytime that I get to travel and she is able to go. Let's look at Psalm 106. Psalm 106. Let's see, Pastor, what time do I need to stop? Okay, so I got 45 minutes or so. Okay. Psalm 106. And I'll read just a little bit from the top of the chapter, and then we'll see if we can get airborne from there. Psalm 106. Praise ye the Lord. O give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. Who can utter the mighty acts of the Lord? Who can show forth all his praise? Blessed are they that keep judgment, and he that doth righteousness at all times. Remember me, O Lord, with thy favor that thou bearest unto thy people. O visit me with thy salvation, that I may see the good of thy chosen, that I may rejoice in the gladness of thy nation, that I may glory with thine inheritance. Now, let me back up and do a little bit of identification on what we just read. This chapter is a rather long chapter. There's 48 verses of it. And what we look at here at the beginning, verses 1 and 2, are basically a rejoicing in the Lord introduction. It's like, hey, before I say what I'm going to say, man, let's wave the flag for the Lord. Verse number 3 is a statement that is kind of like a vow, and I'm going to come back to that, where verses 4 and 5 are a prayer. Now, when you get to verse 7 all the way to the end, at verse 48, there is a rehearsal of a lot of the history of Israel, the ups and the downs. The good times and the bad times. Good leadership, bad leadership. Good fellowship, bad fellowship. A lot of that's rehearsed in the larger part of the chapter. Now, verse number 3 says, blessed are they that keep judgment, and he that doeth righteousness at all times. Now, I'm going to suggest to you here at the beginning that in that verse, there is what I'm going to call a twin formula for blessing. A twin formula. two things. The first one of which has to do with the principles that we hold. When it talks about judgment here, it's not talking about the judgment of the Lord. It's talking about something that we do. If I were to ask you, in your judgment, what's the state of the economy in Madison County? What am I asking for? I'm asking for your opinion. I'm asking for how you assess it. I'm asking for you to express an opinion which will be based on basically your understanding of things. So when he says here, blessed are they that keep judgment, he's talking about values. He's talking about how things are determined or the bedrock principles that are involved. The second thing that he deals with here are not the principles, but the practices, when he says, and he that doeth righteousness at all times. So in the verse, we have, first of all, the bedrock on which everything builds, the principles. The second thing is the day-by-day living it out. How do we do this? How do we conduct business? How are we handling things? Now, you would be well aware, just getting up every morning and going about your business, to know that the day we live in, I mean, in 2018, our world, our nation, is in a time of what I'm going to call spiritual meltdown. A lot of things that a lot of people used to hold dear are not held at all anymore. Kind of a spiritual meltdown time, a time consequently where there's a lot of moral dysfunction. When there's a breakdown or a meltdown spiritually, you can be sure that morally things are going to go, there's going to be a skid. You cannot maintain morality. You cannot maintain common sense. You cannot maintain the normality of life and the decency of society without a spiritual foundation to undergird it. And, of course, in our time, we have things now like political correctness, which is another way of saying, political correctness, that's probably spiritually and morally incorrectness. Or another word comes to mind is stupidity. But anyway, throw out a Greek word or two. You know, our social mores have gravely eroded so that society now doesn't have the foundation under it in a lot of places that it once had it. The schoolroom, the seats of government, even the church house, and a lot of people's houses. The mores, the values that underlie it, there's erosion at the foundation. The principles are no longer there. Betty and I, she records some things for me, like, you know, about the only news channel we watch is Fox, and there's a lot on that that you don't need to pay attention to. But she records, you know, a lot of those things, and she'll find things, and she'll say, here's a little snippet for a minute and a half. You need to watch this. And sometimes it's things where somebody's done a good job of laying something out. At other times, it's maybe, you know, a Pelosi moment or something like that. And sometimes we'll look at that little snippet, and we'll look at one another, and we'll say, how could anybody get in front of the camera and do that? Well, the answer to that question is very simple. Their foundation is not where it needs to be. The foundation is not in place. The superstructure is going to be shaky. And so this passage is talking about us getting the right judgment on things, making the right value on things. And if we get those principles in place, then our practices will work out. She and I have two grown children, a daughter and then a son. And when we sent them off to college, we hoped, you'll forgive me, I'm a little froggy My voice is fine, but just a little froggy. I get up in the morning, I have that, and I get over it just in time to go to bed at night. So, you know, but it does clear up about bedtime. But anyway, when we sent Marlon and Devin off to college, all at once they're out from under our roof. They, at that point, they've lived their whole life under our roof. We have had charge of them that entire time. But when they went off to college, all at once they were not under our roof. So from a distance, she and I are watching, waiting, hoping, and praying that the investment we've made in them will stay in place once they're no longer under our watchful eye. And the Lord's been good to us in a lot of ways, and certainly with our children, with both of them. We were tickled. Things popped up in their lives while they were in college. Challenges came to them, things where they had to decide either to do this or to do that. And I remember one particular time, Marlon called home kind of late in the evening. Something had come up at college. A roommate had come in drunk. And Marlon called me. He had already, he and another guy had gotten the guy settled down and put him to bed. But Marlon said, "Dad," he said, "some of the guys are saying be hush-hush about this." He said, "I don't think I can do that." All at once, I'm about 7 feet tall. I'm growing. Oh, listen, hearing from my son. And he said, "Dad," he said, "I hate to do it, but," he said, "this is my college too." And he said, "if we let this stuff go on," he said, "it'll eventually be destroyed." So I at that point, I didn't try to instruct him. We'd been instructing him for the first 18 years of his life. At that point, I said to him, I said, "Marlon," I said, you pray about it before you go to bed, but go to bed and go to sleep, get a good night's sleep. You know what to do in the morning." That's exactly what I told him. He got up the next morning, went to see the dean. Did exactly what he needed to do. Same. I mentioned this to somebody in a personal conversation, and the person reacted and said, "Oh, my goodness, what's he thinking?" And my response was, you got a neighbor directly across the road from you. They're off on vacation. Somebody backs a moving van up. You see them break in the door. They start loading the TV. They start loading the refrigerator. They start loading everything they can. And you just pull the blinds? I don't think so. Now, I think we'd all do exactly, you know, what needed to be done. Now, you say, what is the deal here with this? When your principles are in place, it makes the practices work pretty neatly. But you got to get the principles in place. Now, sometimes we have people who never get the principles in place, and consequently they just one fiasco after another in their practices. I've known people who they practiced everything right on cue, but they had no clue why they did it, because they were just doing whatever their parents said or whatever the pastor said. You know, Brother Savage and I, we hope you will listen to us. We hope you will take instruction. But very honestly, we're trying to work ourselves out of a job. We hope that everybody, every boy and girl, every teenager, every young man, we hope all of you, we hope you will get the level of biblical maturity in you so that you won't have to call. I mean, if you do, fine, we'll answer the phone. But we hope there'll come a time where you won't have to call us to make the right decision. You'll have the bedrock principles yourself. That's what we're trying to do. So, what we have here, principles are foundational. Psalm 11 says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? I mean, if you don't have the foundations in place. Jesus gave us the parable right at the end of the Sermon on the Mount about the guy who built on the rock and the guy that built on the sand. I call them Rocky and Sandy. I've known a lot of Rockies who built right. I've known a lot of Sandys who didn't build right. In fact, a long time ago, when I was a student here in Jackson at Union University. I was pastor out at Decaturville, the First Baptist Church of Decaturville, 50 miles from here. But I lived out there, and I drove in 5 days a week during two semesters and 6 days a week for summer school. We had a family in our church. They were Greek. Never will forget them. They were, I don't know, late 60s at that point in their life. They were Greek. The man's name was John Papajohn. And one Sunday, Brother Papajohn said to me, and he had his kind of Greek accent. They had immigrated here to this country some years before. He said, Brother Pastor, he said, would you and the missus come out and take a meal at our house? And I said, well, Brother Papajohn, let's see what we can do on the schedule. We'd be glad to do it. So later that week, we went out to their house. Decaturville is 5 miles from the Tennessee River. They lived on the Tennessee River. I mean, on the river. I had not been to their house, but when we pulled up to their house, nice home, we walked in, and I shall never forget what I saw. It was the most unusual thing I've ever seen. I've never seen it anyplace else. Because they had cleaned off a spot down to the bare rock, and the only floor they had in the house was the solid rock of that river bluff. I mean, no tile, no linoleum, no carpet. It was the rock of the river bluff. You walked out the back of their house, there was maybe 30 feet to where that bluff dropped down 50 or 60 feet into the water. Now, you talk about building and drilling the foundation into the rock. They did exactly that. Now, what I'm advocating is that you get your principles down so that you're drilling into the rock of the Scriptures, finding out how to do marriage, how to do family, how to do business, how to do church. I mean, all of that. We build everything based on the principles that we find in the book. Now, you say, what kind of things are you talking about? I'm glad you asked that. Actually, the Bible's so full of things, if we started trying to enumerate the principles, we'd be busy for a while. But let me just give you some sample things that I think are so very practical. I mean, these are Bible principles. I just, in thinking about this after I latched onto this verse that we're looking at, I just said, okay, what are some of those principles? And here's some I just pulled up easily. Like Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, there is a verse that we call the Golden Rule that says, therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Now, you understand why we call it the Golden Rule. You're looking up this way. You see this beautiful head of hair. Probably with those lights, it doesn't look like I got any. And I know if you photograph it, I'll look as though I'm totally bald. But I do have some hair up there, three, maybe four. And I organized them this morning very carefully and sprayed them till they're set like concrete. Now, if you come up to me and you take your hand and you you ought to be aware I have two hands. And especially I'm not gonna tell you which one, but one of them has an automatic reflex in it. You mess my hair up, the reflex on my other one is gonna work, okay? Just warn you. I mean, all in the love of the Lord now. No hostility. I'm just telling you, just automatic reflexes. If you come up and muss up my hair, what I'm trying to tell you is I would not like that. Now, okay, I don't like that. So you walk up to me and you have arranged your hair like you like it to be arranged. And if I look at it and say, oh, I think it would be fun to just. But you know why I don't do that? Is because there's a principle in the. You say it doesn't say don't mess up the hair. You look closely, it does say that. Because I've already told you I don't want my hair messed up, and so the Bible tells me if I don't want mine messed up, I don't mess yours up. And that plays out anywhere you want to plug it in. you just do to others. The kids at McDonald's who wait on you and can't get your order right. What do? You treat them like you'd like somebody to treat your children if they were working there. That's what you do. Yeah. So, Bible principle. Here's another one that's likened to it. And this one I like. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32 says, "And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." Those are Bible principles. There's several of them in that verse. You know, we teach the children in Sunday school when they're 2 years old, we teach them to memorize, "And be ye kind." But you know, that verse is still in the Bible when I get to be 25 and 55. Now, let me tell you where the hardest place in the world is to make this work. It's at the place where you eat and sleep all the time. You know, we go out 6-7 days a week and we're nice to everybody. We come home, we let our hair down. All four of them, we let them down. And I mean, it's so easy. It is so easy to come home, and instead of being nice like we've been all day, my predecessor, the sword, Dr. Hudson, he was the funniest mortal on the planet. And he used to say, people would ask him, they'd say, "Did you wake up grumpy this morning?" He said, "No, I let her sleep." I mean, he'd just go on and on with it. Now, hey, listen, it's easy, male or female, it's easy for us to, "Oh, we're nice all day. I get home, I'm tired of smiling. I'm tired of being nice." But folks, if you're going to be nice, if you got to choose between the two, be nice at home. Those folks you run into all day long, I mean, you may have to deal with them a few hours or a few weeks or a few months or a year or two of your life. But family, I mean, you got to put up with them forever. And if you're going to practice this, I mean, I suggest you do it everywhere. The Bible principle is, but we got to make this work at home. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving. You know, the Bible has a good bit to say about forgiving. Somewhere along the way, I think forbearing may be tied into it too. That forbearing word means we just put up with one another. I mean, you say, "Well, you've done that 12 times. Yeah, how often do we forgive? 70 times 7. Somewhere I read that. All right. So it's a good Bible principle. You say, "Well, how can we?" Hey, look, the verse says, God for Christ's sake forgave you. If we get excited about that, it'll be a whole lot easier to practice this toward everybody else. Bible principles. Look at this one. Here's another one. Colossians 3:23 says, "Whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men." So I walked in the door, the front door here a little while ago. I think it was you all. What is standing at the door? Y'all were handing out bulletins. First thing I walked in the door. Here's a brother and his wife. They got bulletins. They're saying hello, shaking hands with us. Say, what's the deal? They were showing warmth to us coming through the door. Probably shook hands with some of you as well. You say, "Well, what's the deal?" Well, really, I mean, instead of them frowning up and saying, "Oh man, we got to do this again." No. They're putting their heart into that. Folks come up here to sing. You know, can't you just imagine somebody walking up here and say, "Well, Pastor, I've been singing. You know, I've been on the schedule once a month for the last 3 months. I'm kind of getting tired of this." Who would want to hear them sing? No. And very frankly, Pastor, sometimes you and I hear preachers out in some of our meetings. I mean, you know what I'm saying? If they're dreading it that bad, why should we sit and listen? You know? So whether we're greeting or singing or working in the nursery, God bless those folks who work with your little darlings in the nursery. Woo! No doubt there's some folks who work in that nursery every week, go home about 12, 12:15, 12:30 every Sunday, feel like they've been run over by a Jeep. What is their problem? They got their heart in it. And this whole deal, he said, whatever you do, do it heartily. Here's another one. James chapter 4 and verse 17. James 4:17 says, therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. You say, well, I understand those ten commandments. They say don't lie, don't steal, don't adulterate, don't covet. Don't. We understand that. But here's a verse that says, if you know to do good and don't do it, that too is sin. It's a Bible principle. So we know the Lord's day is the Lord's day. We know that 10% is the tithe. I mean, we know we shouldn't cuss. We know we shouldn't smoke. We know we shouldn't drink. I had a fellow say to me years ago, he said, I don't think there's any place in the Bible where it says thou shalt not smoke. And you know he's right. There's not a place in the Bible where it says that. But if you give me a minute or two, I think I could write down a bunch of things, Bible principles, that if you take them seriously, my guess is the smoke would stop coming out of your chimney. Amen. I'm just being candid with you. All right? If you know to do good and don't do it, the Bible says that's sin. Here's another one. Look at this. Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, any praise, think on these things. Wow. You know why I recommend you don't watch HBO? Because it messes up your thinker. Trashy TV messes up your thinker. This verse says, if something's true, think on it. If it's honest, think on it. If it's just, think on it. If it's pure, think on it. If it's lovely, think on it. Good report, virtuous, praiseworthy, think on it. You say, okay, I'm thinking. All right, we got you headed. Because see, your doer doesn't do anything your thinker hadn't thought of. So if we get your thinker thinking right, your doer is going to do right. What do we got here? Principles first, then practices. If we get the right principles, then the practices will be upright like they should be. I mentioned the Lord's Day. Here's another Bible principle. Hebrews 10:25. Forsake not the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. I was in Indianapolis last Sunday, and just down the street, four or five blocks from the church where I was one of those big contemporary rock and roll churches. I went by there on Sunday night just before 6 o'clock. There was not a car on the parking lot. Our service lasted about an hour. I got out of there inside of an hour and a half, headed south, coming back home Sunday night, and passed by there at roughly 7:30. Still no cars on that parking lot. They're not there on Sunday night. They're not even open, which is characteristically true of these so-called contemporary and emergent churches. So what's the deal? Well, they've basically trimmed back to one service on Sunday morning and then volleyball games and, you know, meeting for pie at somebody's house maybe another time during the week, something like that. So you say, what are you trying to say? The verse I just read to you said we're not forsake the assembling of ourselves together and so much the more. And I think some of these folks have rewritten it to say so little the less. Now, I don't think you and I have to live here. But very frankly, knowing me like I know me, and knowing Betty, knowing us like we know us, we need it. And my guess is your family does too. So, we got a Bible principle. And we're gonna soak up what the church house has. And we're not going to just drop in for a snack. We're going to feed on it. Here's another Bible principle. Matthew 4:19, Jesus said, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." I think I heard an announcement a few minutes ago, something about Good Neighbor Day or something like that. You say, what's that about, fishing? Just fishing for folks who need what goes on here all the time. No doubt there are people in Jackson, Madison County, people in your neighborhood, some of them live close to you, they need somebody to care. Maybe if you said, we're having a neighbor day, I'd love for you, you're my neighbor, I'd love for you to come go to church with me. In fact, if you come go to church, I'll take you to, and you pick out a place, Longhorn for lunch or McDonald's for lunch or Wendy's for lunch. People have a hard time resisting food. See, I was a pastor a long time, and I know you can have days, you can have big days, but we all got to remember that we're all supposed to be fishing, we're all supposed to be going after somebody. A friend of mine in Murfreesboro just recently, I don't think he had a big day, but he just decided, in fact, he stops by where I eat breakfast every morning at McD's. He stopped by one morning to see me, and the McD's that I eat at, we got a bunch of homeless people there. And it dawned on him, he said, so he put him up some flyers. He came down there two or three mornings. And you know what he did on the Sunday? He had about 30 of them. Men and ladies alike. They had, I don't know, five or six of them got saved the day. They're homeless folks. There's all kinds of folks you can go after. You say, well, that crowd doesn't smell very good. No, and in fact, that crowd's not very good in a lot of ways. But I've gotten to know a bunch of them over the years, going to that same McDonald's. One of the guys laid down in front of a train, what was it, Wednesday morning this week? In fact, I'm not sure yet even which guy it was, because there's probably 40, 50, 60 of them that come in there off and on through the mornings. But I know it's one of the guys that I know. I just don't know him by name. And I'm wondering, is that one I missed? Or is that one of the ones that some of us got? Whatever the case, you and I are supposed to be fishing for men. Now, there's many Bible principles. But I'll back up to the text. Blessed are they that keep judgment. They figure out how to value things. They figure out what the bedrock is. And then they go do the right thing at all times. So we got two things here. We got principles and practices. Now let me give you a little add-on, a little addendum to what we've done here. Principles will dictate practices. And the two of them, your principles and your practices, will determine how you conduct your life. Your whole philosophy of life will be impacted by the principles you establish and by the practices you exercise. Here's some things that I think will help you. There's no God like God the Creator. You and I just do well to acknowledge that God the Creator is who He says He is. By the way, you'll see this in the sword later this month. Just this week, a group of scientists made an announcement that they didn't want to make. One of them was quoted as saying, "I have worked as hard as I can to not have to report this." But their research, DNA research, they have now determined, their research strongly suggests that evolution, no millions of years evolution. Now, they're getting closer. They're not quite there yet. But they said sometime in the last 100,000 years, they're getting closer to reality and closer to the Bible. No God like the Bible. And when you and I realize there's no book like the Bible, no God like God the Creator, no book like the Bible, absolutely none. Pick it up on any page. You can't turn it to the wrong page. And there's no salvation except what we get through Christ. Folks do not get salvation being religious, getting dipped in water, taking communion, being a Baptist or a Catholic or whatever. That's not the way folks get to heaven. No salvation except through the Lord Jesus Christ. Furthermore, there's no promise that God won't keep. You find promises in the Bible, nail them down. Build on them. There's no person God cannot save. Some of the toughest, meanest, just down and out, up and out people. You and I look at them sometimes, and we have a tendency to measure them on a scale. We may not mentally do it, but we start thinking, that guy's so tough, he'll never get saved. Fact is, the tougher and the taller they are, sometimes the greater thud with which they fall when they do. And when I was pastor, sometimes, once in a while, somebody would come in and say, "Pastor, I'm not going to see that guy anymore. I'm not going to see that guy anymore." I'd say, give me that one. He's about ready. Figure when somebody else is so frustrated they're giving up, it's probably time for me to go see about him. Because, surface appearances are not always reality. No person God cannot save. No problem God cannot solve. That guy's been married 12 times. I'm just telling you, there's no problem God can't solve. Anybody's life can be broken into 1,000 pieces, and we may be totally frustrated if we think we can put it back together. But the great God of creation, following the book that is the Bible, taking the salvation offered through Christ, building on the promises that never fail, and realizing that no matter the person, no matter the problem, the God of heaven is bigger than all of it. That enables us to be positive about what we do. So, we get our principles in place, and that heads us toward the practices that we need to be governed by. You and your spouse may struggle sometimes. But if you get nailed down what I'm giving you here, you'll get through it. You'll survive. You'll be determined to survive. Because when you read in the Bible the things that are said about that, you just say, "Hey, this is us, this is where we are, and we're going to get with God and solve it." You may have been doing good till you had kids. Your little ones come along and challenges come with that. Our son, who has been partnering with me now for 26, 27 years, and who is as fine a Christian man as I know. And I mean that sincerely. When he arrived at our house, he was the poster child for the self-willed child. We thought he was going to take, in fact, I'm not sure he didn't take over a time or two. Betty and I mean, we were young. There was a lot we didn't know about a lot of things. When we were frustrated because he was giving us fits. And we were at her mom and dad's. Her mom and dad, simple country folks, heart of the earth, salt of the earth people. And we were kind of whining to her mom and dad about the problem we were having. And I don't know whether it was me or her, one of us said, "I don't know what we're going to do." And we never will forget. Her dad kind of stood up a little bit out of his seat, and he pointed at us, and he said, "I'll tell you one thing you're not going to do. You're not going to quit." That's about as close as he ever came to interfering. And I wouldn't call that interference, because it was such a help to us. We just said, "Hey, he's right. We're not going to quit. And if you get your principles down, whatever struggles you're having with one of your youngins, you're not going to quit. You're going to keep building, keep doing what God says, keep following the plan." You say, "How long did it take to raise kids?" About 40 years. Nothing quite like what's in the book. And the right principles plugged in will create the right practices. I was about ready to graduate from Union, and they did this review of my transcript, and somebody in the registrar's office said to me, "Oh, you're getting a teacher's certificate." I was certifying to teach in the state of Tennessee. And they said, "You've got to have that little two-hour math course." Well, it was a little two-hour math course I started and dropped. I didn't realize it was a requirement for my minor in secondary education. And they said, you can't graduate without that. So the day I walked, I got an empty shell of a diploma. And I went up to the college at McKenzie, Bethel, in the summertime, and took that little two-hour math course. Now, you know, when you take a math course, it's probably a good idea if you take a pencil or two. I found myself not even needing a pencil in that course. And a little young lady in the class who was brilliant about the stuff, I said to her, "You ever done any tutoring?" She said, "No." I said, "If I paid you, would you?" So I took the class, and then I sat with her in the library for an hour or two every Saturday for the length of the summer course and let her tutor me, and I survived that math course. Got my diploma in late August. But I tell you that to tell you, the professor in that, he had a saying. I don't remember anything he taught us about math. Two and two still is sometimes five and a half when I added up. But he had one thing that he said, and he said, and he said, and he said. He would teach us some formula, and then he would give us a problem. And when he had finished teaching the formula, he said, "All right, here's the problem." And then he would say to us, "Okay, you got the rule down? All right, plug in the rule, grind the crank." Annoyed me, just hearing him say it. Plug in the rule, grind the crank. He would teach us the mathematical rule, then here's the problem. He's saying, plug it in, plug it in, plug it in, plug it in. You and I learn the Bible principles. Here comes Monday. Here comes Thursday afternoon. Here comes Sunday morning. We learn the Bible principles. We learn the rules. Plug it in, plug it in, plug it in. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. January, February, March, plug it in, plug it in, plug it in. Summer, winter, and fall, and spring. North, south, east, west. Plug it in, plug it in, plug it in. This verse says, at all times. That means at church, that means at homes, that means down the street at the restaurant. Plug it in, plug it in, plug it in. I can still hear the professor up there at McKenzie saying, plug in the room, grind the crank. You find these Bible rules, principles, and just plug them in. Blessed are they who keep judgment, and he that doeth righteousness at all times. Right principles, upright practices. All right, we're a couple of minutes ahead of schedule, but that'll give you a chance to get a drink of water and fellowship a little bit. Father, thank you for this good day, for the privilege to be here at Bethel and to be together with Brother and Mrs. Savage and with these precious people that are part of the church family here. Thank you, dear Lord, for the privilege that is given to Betty and me today. And we pray that our time together in this conference is going to just be real sweet and special all the way. Give us, I pray today, a full measure of your good things. In Jesus' name, amen.